Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It is a Calgary Flames game day. Game two between the Flames and the Stars tonight. 7:30 warm-up, 8:30 puck drop. The pregame coverage started at around 5:30 this morning, and it's going to continue throughout the day. Welcome to Hockey Central at noon, everyone. Peter Klein, Logan Gordon with you today, getting ready for a game two. Adjustments will be made. Who does that better? We'll discuss as the day goes along. It's going to be a lot of fun to figure it all out as we head towards the 8:30 puck drop. A lot to get to on the show today. Let's get to the first part of it with the color voice of the Calgary Flames, Peter Loubardias.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
And Lou, we'll get to Flames Stars in a matter of moments, but as Logan had in the update, some news coming down a few moments ago from Elliot Friedman. Canadiens general manager Marc Bergevin announcing that head coach Claude Julien was admitted to hospital last night with chest pains, undergoing tests today, not COVID-related. Kirk Muller will assume head coaching duties for the rest of the Philadelphia series. So some very, very scary real-life news for the Montreal Canadiens today.
Well, absolutely. And I think this resonates right through hockey for lots of different reasons. But, you know, Claude has been a terrific hockey coach and a hockey person, whether it was way back in his playing days or the first time I had an opportunity to meet and interview Claude Julien is when he led the Hall Olympique to the 1997 Memorial Cup Championship, and then dealt with him as well in his early days with the Hamilton Bulldogs. He is a terrific coach. He's a good person. And 60 years old. But two things for me, Peter. I never think more about anything than this. And that is the stress on people can be so difficult. Think about COVID and all the stress and the uncertainty. Well, being a head coach at the highest level is not easy, and it does put incredible stress. These people are so dedicated to their craft, and in the case of Claude Julien at 60 years old, they are so all in. They don't sleep well. They're worried. They're thinking at night about the next shift, and most importantly, I just hope he is going to be fine. Hopefully everything's going to work out. And then the other tie-in is that, you know, guess who was Claude's long, long time running mate? Jeff Ward. So, You know, these are trying, difficult times, but just really happy that, medicine, they do the testing and hope he's going to be okay, and anybody who's ever been associated with this man, I think just speaks glowingly about the type of worker and the type of person, and I think the resume speaks for itself. So to Claude Julien and his family and his friends, just wish him the best.
Yeah, hopefully this all ends up all right, and it does bring the human element into things. And you also kind of forget with all this going on, these guys are away from a lot of the comforts of home. Yes. That can take some of those stresses away. And I have no idea what his home life is like, but I'm assuming there's at least a couple things at home that help relieve the stress at least a little bit throughout the day, and not having that kind of stuff for him and for everyone in this bubble right now.
Peter,
it's a sacrifice they're making.
Peter, it just speaks volumes to how you think about things. It's so true. And when you are an all-in person, and generally do get to a high, high level in anything that you do, your commitment to that craft and being all in means that A, those safer things, those comfy things that can get you away from the stress and thinking and being all in, that's incredibly important for all of us to have those people, those places to turn to. And you're right. I mean, I'm not saying that it goes hand in hand, but that's, I think, sometimes what people don't always understand. And unless, to a certain degree, you're an all-in person, I think it is hard to understand. And not everybody that goes to work, let's be honest, and it's frankly from my own personal development, I've had to learn that there are more important things in my life than just Peter Loubardius, the broadcaster. So it's a hard balance to find.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And when you have entire cities putting pressure on you to figure things out, that just adds to it. I can't imagine. So, yes, all the best. Hoping to hear some good news on Claude Julien as the day goes along. But any news that we do hear, we will pass along. There's no easy segue to go from this to the hockey game that will be played tonight between the Flames and the Stars. But I do think we should transition now as the Flames get ready for game two between them and the Dallas Stars this evening. 7:30 warm-up, 8:30 puck drop here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And Lou, it's, as we'll hear from Jeff Ward, a bit of a different Flames team that we're seeing here than we've seen in playoffs past.
Well, Peter and Logan, here's what I've thought a lot about in the last 24 hours. And you guys, I can probably say this about the series against Vancouver in 2015, but how long has it been in assessing, watching the Calgary Flames go about their business in big games against good opponents? Have we probably wondered more about how their opponent was going to respond rather than how they might respond? Isn't that a great sign of growth, guys?
Yeah, huge, right? Like, it's not, okay, what do the Flames have to change? It's all right. How you adjusting to us now? Because that's not something we've seen from this team in a while. It's always been about how do the Flames get more out of player X or line Y in game number two than it's been worrying about the other team.
And I think we're at that place. And it's one of the reasons that the Calgary Flames are having such a good early, albeit early, run in this playoff scenario, is because they're a different team. I think they're grittier. I think that they've done it collectively. And I don't know if Logan has, I have two Jeff Ward clips, so I'm going to get to it this way. Logan, play the quick, what I think is the big reason for why they've been prepared to do it a little different.
Our guys talked about it an awful lot, about how sick and tired they were of losing at this time of year. And I think they understand now, they're starting to learn exactly what has to happen in order to win it this time of year.
That is the mindset piece, guys. I think until you, as a person and as a team collectively, get tired of your fate, a lot of times we don't change it. But this is a team that has demonstrated, at least early, that they're ready to. So that's probably the mindset part of it. But the other part that Jeff talked about that I think in a hockey matter is their commitment to defend other people, their attention to defensive detail. And I've heard this, guys, from every coach I've ever been around. And that is one of the great challenges that you have, especially for some of your offensive-minded people, is understanding that the better job you do without the puck, which, by the way, there isn't one analytic in the world that won't back up that you have the puck a lot less on your stick or your team sometimes, certainly individual, than you do when you don't have it. So what you do without it really, really matters. And as we hear from Jeff, probably one of the biggest foundation pieces they have found coming off the break is just that, how they are defending individually and as a group.
It's been proven time and time and time again. If you can't play away from the puck, excuse me, at this time of year, then, you know, you're probably not going to get what you want. They're understanding what that process is, and now they're putting it into their play. So, I think it's just a commitment by every guy in that room that they will do whatever it takes in order to try to win a hockey game.
And for Jeff Ward and his group, it really, I find it very fascinating that the things that we're applauding them for now are some of the things that have been driven home even since before Jeff Ward took over as the head coach, right? Like, he was still the assistant coming into the Hot Stove Lounge postgame talking about guys need to start to hate losing. And right from the word go, when he took over as the head coach, it was about your play away from the puck and how important that thing is. And now, all of a sudden, here we are in the playoffs, and they're doing those things. And wouldn't you know it, Lubo, it's working.
It is. And I'll just add one more piece to that. Peter, you don't think every single coach with this group has tried their best to get to that place? Single one. Trust me. And all coaches have strengths and weaknesses. But do you know where change comes from with the team? Is it has to come from within. The players win games. So if the players play the games and win the games, where does buy-in really need to start? With them. And they right now in their play are seeing that if you do it this way, you can win. And when our game, no matter what we do for a living, do we not derive great confidence from seeing results? You know, if I'm 100% all in on trying, you know, to drop a few pounds and my work is really, really good, I think my chances of accomplishing my goals are great. But until we do it different, you know what's going to happen with the scale? Not going to move. But just like those of us, including myself, who might have some struggles there, you have to understand that it's not a 3 or 4 month commitment. It's how your mindset has to be. And that right now, and it can change very quickly. And that's why coaches feel great stress, is because in sports and in life, we get very fixated on the end result. But guys, isn't it about the process and understanding how important playing the right way gets us to the end of the line in the way that we want?
Yeah, it's funny that all these things that people have been asking for, as you mentioned, coach after coach and year after year, I don't know how the message was being sent from either coach or any of the coaches, but all these things that were being talked about, and now, oh, hey, look at this. They're doing it, and it is working. And for the Flames, it has them with a 1-0 series lead over the Dallas Stars. And now, as we mentioned, it is Dallas's turn to try to counterpunch. Where are we looking for adjustments? Because as we said, the Stars need to adjust to what the Flames did in game one. Where does that counterpunch now come from Dallas, do you think?
Well, I'm going to start with potentially the biggest adjustment going into game two for the Stars, and that's in goal. Yesterday, Rick Bonus, during his media availability, made it very much sound like Ben Bishop, who was not available, he was available to back up and didn't play in the final round robin game against St. Louis, would be ready. So in Ben Bishop, it's not just, guys, about his ability to stop the puck. It's more about his ability to play the puck as it is about, obviously, for a goalie, you know, it's not rocket science. You need to keep it out of there. But when you think about Dallas and their strengths, when you can feed transition with people like Haskinen and Klingberg in particular, and you end up with a third defenseman back there in a lot of ways, well, what does that do? It helps your transition, and it also makes it far more difficult for your opponent to forecheck, because the difference between Anton Khudobin in goal as opposed to Ben Bishop is, on the forecheck, when I put pucks into the opponent's zone, I have to do it a little smarter and more effectively, because if I don't, you know what happens? Ben takes it, he makes the outlet, bang, out you come. And wouldn't you guys both agree? The Flames' ability to establish a forecheck has gone a long, long way in some of their early success. So that, to me, as much as it's about Ben and how good he has been, a Vezina Trophy candidate, you know, generally in the top five of goaltenders, that to me is the big potential adjustment. And the other thing that I learned about it really doesn't come in assessing Ben. It was spending a whole season watching Mike Smith. You don't think that when you have someone like an elite puck-moving goalie that it doesn't take wear and tear off your defense? So think about it from this standpoint. So somebody dumps the puck in your zone. As a defenseman, now that shortens things for you. A, you probably don't have to go all the way back 200 feet and get pounded. But now in a lot of cases, if you're the first guy back with time, now you can act as an outlet. So now that helps me get to transition. Puck's going to move out of my own zone. And the other part that lots of players have talked about, your defense doesn't get pounded nearly as much. And haven't the Flames made a lot of hay by being physical on other teams' defense?
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of the main keys in how this whole ball started rolling in the right direction for them.
Well, Matthew Tkachuk trains because of his St. Louis roots and Ben being from the same place, knows Ben well. And with that, the Flames number 19 knows what extra challenge that might provide for the Flames in game two.
Yeah, I know him pretty well. We've been working out with the same trainer back in St. Louis for I don't know how many years now, but a while. And, you know, really good guy and elite goalie. He's top five in the league every year. And some years he's up for the Vezina and one of the best in the league. So I think what separates him compared to other goalies is obviously the size, but I think it's his puck playing. It's unbelievable. He's a third defenseman back there. Reminds me a lot of Smitty. I think those two are the best puck moving goalies in the NHL. So he adds that threat, but he's one of the best goalies in the league. And I'm sure we'll face him at one point this series with how many games and such little days, but both their goalies are really, really good. That Hudobin, he is so steady back there and tough goalie to beat. You know, really good at making that first save. So they both have they're two of the best in the league for a reason, and they've showed it this year. And we just got to make sure we get as many bodies in front of them because, you know, kind of like Taubes, they're used to making that first save.
And so now with Ben Bishop for potentially the obstacle for the Flames tonight, and as he mentioned there, and as we've talked about, the puck playing ability kind of changing things a little bit. How do the Flames adjust? Is it just being smarter about the dump ins, or how do the Flames handle that scenario?
It's not simple in any way, shape, or form. Nothing about executing, especially at this time of year, Mr. Klein, is easy. But yes, the Flames will want to keep the puck away from Ben Bishop. And even when it's not a puck playing goalie of an elite nature, guess how you get pucks back? Well, we talk a lot about possession. Well, when teams force you to give up possession, you need to put it in places where you can get it back. And those are the undervalued little things that just add up to big things. So when a team controls the neutral zone, will force you to dump pucks. That's what every team tries to do to everybody else. They want to establish a forecheck. They want to turn you over because every time I turn somebody over, chances are I get to catch you with my team having more numbers and you having less people to defend. So that will be something to listen or especially watch for tonight is how the Flames, when they are forced to dump the puck, do they give themselves a good chance to get it back?
And last one, just to close here, we talk about the Stars making adjustments. Is there any adjustment you'd like to see the Flames make? I think that game one went about as perfectly, save for a 9-second stretch, as one can imagine. But was there anything from a Flames side that you'd like to see maybe tweaked going into game two?
No, for me, it's in many ways The first period was brilliant. After giving up the first goal, if you talk about the entire season, in what was 43 out of 73 times, the Flames have scored first. I thought their first period really set the table, Peter, for the entire game. In terms of their start, I even see great progression there. And then in every game, here's what the Flames have to understand, and they do. When we can dictate more to the opponent than they dictate to us, A, that's what you're looking for. But I would bet at a certain time, and didn't we see it in the second period the other day? It gets back to the philosophy that I really believe. I think in battles of teams who are really close, who gets more done with the time that they are better than their opponent? And on top of that, how little water do you take into your boat when the tide turns and the other team is better than you? Each and every game, in many ways, it comes down to that. And how you manage momentum when it starts to shift. Did the Flames ever do a really good job of managing momentum for any length of time against Colorado in last year's playoffs?
No, quite the opposite.
I think I'm almost at the end of the road today.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one tonight.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it awesome?
Like, oh, and it's so good.
I don't know about you guys. And again, I'm the easiest sell on planet Earth when it comes to highly competitive sports. Guys, I cannot say enough about how good the majority of this hockey has been. It's been just an incredible treat to sit back and watch.
It's been exactly what you want playoff hockey to be. The atmosphere is different. Obviously, it is different. But the play on the ice, even Tampa Bay Columbus, going the fifth overtime, you could see like guys were starting to wear down. But that fourth overtime was as high a level hockey as I've seen. That was the best fourth overtime I've seen in my life. That was fantastic hockey all the way through.
My hope when I had an opportunity to chat with you guys, you know, during the course of the summer, was one of the interesting parts for me is all kinds of nuances, the bubble, all kinds of different things. But what fascinated me, one of the things that did, was we've never gone into an NHL playoff situation where people were rested. And I think you're seeing what that can mean when people don't have, you know, 85, 90 games of fatigue going in. And my guess is the only thing that's going to happen is the execution is going to get even better.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy to think about because it's been really good so far, especially sure from a Flames perspective. We'll see if that continues tonight as they take on the Stars. Lou, enjoy the game. It's not me tomorrow, but we'll all hear what you have to say about it tomorrow.
Great stuff, Mr. Klein. Great stuff. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Have a good one, everybody.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
It is the Flames and the Stars tonight. 8:30 is the start. 7:30 is your warm-up. Pre-game coverage started at about 5:30 this morning. Who are we kidding? Time for us to take a break. When we come back, the Athletics' Eric DeHatchuk stops by. We continue to dive into the quarterfinal round between the Flames and the Stars, and we'll get a little bit more on Claude Julien as a bit of a scare for the Habs head coach today. That and more here on Hockey Central at Noon, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hockey Central at Noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Is this thing on? Welcome back. Game 2 tonight between the Flames and the Stars coming up at 8:30 here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Peter Klein, now that my mute button is off, back with you alongside Logan Gordon. Very pleased to be joined now by the Athletics' Eric DeHatchuk, our regular here on Thursdays on Hockey Central at Noon. Eric, how are you today, sir?
Excellent. I was wondering why I couldn't hear you. Now I know.
I had this wonderfully well thought out, perfectly executed intro, and only myself and my cats heard it. Apparently, the mute button needs to be off for me for you to hear me, I guess.
Yes, correct.
Well, let's get into it here. Before we get too far into Flames and Stars, Logan had it in the update. Claude Julien will miss likely the rest of the series as he leaves the bubble because of some chest pain. Obviously, a scary situation. I'm sure you've covered Claude Julien a time or two in your career. I guess just some thoughts on that news.
Yeah, well, you know, of course, the first time, you know, like the minute you hear that somebody is leaving the bubble and is hospitalized in this day and age, of course, you immediately think it's COVID-19 related. And Marc Bergevin, the general manager, quickly dismissed that this was more of a chest pain thing. And I guess we're all intuiting that, you know, that hopefully he didn't have a heart attack or some kind of a heart any kind of a malfunction. But that's, you know, the prudent move when you get to that age, and I'm that age, so I get that, is, you know, go in for tests. You know, he's under the careful eye of doctors, and hopefully it will be determined that it's nothing serious and that the recovery will be quick, and that depending then again on what happens in the remainder of the series between, you know, the Flyers and Montreal, you know, possibly he could even return to the bench. But it, you know, in a situation like this, you know, you have to err on the side of caution. This is, you know, the right decision. You know, how much of an effect will it have? Well, you know, probably not that much, because in terms of style of play and preparation, the heavy lifting has been done already for this series. You know, Montreal, I think, demonstrated in that series, in that first game against Philadelphia, that they can hang in with the Flyers, that it looks like it's going to be a battle of two, you know, goaltenders on the, you know, opposite end of the experience spectrum, but both playing at a really high level. And in terms of, you know, bench coach, you know, I personally think Claude Julien's a very good bench coach, but, you know, Kirk Muller does have NHL head coaching experience. And so I don't think that the transition will be too difficult. And the other thing that a lot of teams have shown us in this day and age is that, you know, like all the old rules are out the window anyway, and you just have to, on any given morning, something can turn, and you just have to be ready to move with it. And so I think that this is just another example of, you know, of teams preparing to pivot quickly, because, you know, the world is turned upside down, and, you know, here's just one more complication that they need to deal with. And, you know, what we've seen, what we literally seen of Montreal so far in these playoffs, is that they've been pretty good at that kind of thing.
Yeah, and like you said, there isn't going to be a major style. This isn't a coaching change. It's just a different guy back there because of health reasons. Kirk Muller isn't going to go, all right, my time to shine. Let's go implement the systems I want. This is going to be the same message, just a different voice providing it today.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, then the one thing that I would say is that, you know, that, you know, you watch Montreal, and believe me, that, you know, I didn't like their chances, you know, even a little bit, you know, going into this round. But, you know, that when you don't see a team very often, then all of a sudden, you know, now they come back. So I'm looking at, like, Nick Suzuki for the first time in a long time. And you know, all of my colleagues at The Athletic, right in Montreal, have been saying, you know, that this kid has made important strides. And now you watch and you say, yeah, okay, I see what they're talking about. So, you know, on top of getting everybody healthy, you know, they've also seen some genuine development where they needed it. Because the one thing that I didn't like about Montreal, loved their goaltending, loved their defense, not sure that, you know, their 1-12 group of forwards was good enough to make any kind of noise in these playoffs. But you add somebody like Suzuki, who seems to be sort of, you know, taking that next step up the NHL ladder, making a difference and just being involved in the play. I love the way he goes inside. You know what I mean? Like, he's just one of those guys mm-hmm. that, you know, I didn't know anything about him or very little. And then you watch him play and you think, okay, there's a player that is going to play a long time in the NHL because he's skilled and can make plays on the outside. He doesn't mind going, you know, cutting into the middle and going into traffic too. So I like what I've seen. I guess I know it's just a small snapshot so far, But, you know, when you have someone like that that looks like a top six forward, maybe already, and, you know, and Brendan Gallagher, of course, is a heart and soul guy. Like, you know, what Gallagher brings to the mix in a series like this is even more critical than what he usually does, because he's just such a pepper pot and such an enthusiastic guy. And so when you have to generate your own emotion because there aren't fans in the building, he's just, you know, so good. You know, like, and his attitude and approach is contagious for the rest of his teammates. So, you know, Montreal suddenly become a fun team to watch, which, believe me, you know, if we'd had this discussion, you know, at any point during the season or, you know, or maybe going into the thing, I would not have made that comment. But they look like they're kind of a fun team to watch right now, which, you know, surprises me a bit.
Transitioning into the Flames Stars series, and I'm guessing Flames fans think this Flames team is a lot of fun to watch too, and they have been over the first few games inside the bubble. But that was, I've said it a couple times now, that was as close to perfect as you can get for a playoff game, with the exception of 9 seconds against the Stars. Mm-hmm. The Flames look pretty impressive to me. What did you see from Calgary in game one?
Yeah, no question about it. You know, and I know a lot of people have been talking about the impact of that third line, but you can't understate it. You know, like when you think about teams that have had playoff success, you just have to have three lines going. You know, I always go back to Anaheim when they won the Cup, and they had a, you know, that line of, you know, Sammy Paulson, Travis Moan, and Robbie Niedermeyer, and so they were so important in terms of what Anaheim was able to accomplish that there were people that had, you know, Sammy Paulson sort of an honorable mention on their Conn Smythe Trophy ballots. And so if you can get that kind of like a presence, I guess is the best way of putting it, from your third line, you know, they go out there and they create havoc with their forechecking. They use the body well. They provide a little bit of offense here and there. You know, a line like that can be a catalyst and can really help take the pressure off of your first and second line. So, you know, what went wrong last year? Well, you know, the top players on the Flames team didn't, you know, they just weren't able to find the score sheet. And when they weren't, you know, other than Sam Bennett, they didn't really get a lot from everyone else. So, you know, you look at this group right now, and if that third line can maintain this level of play, you know, maybe they won't score at this pace, but if they can maintain that level and that presence that they have right now, you know, then I like this matchup against Dallas, because I think in Dallas's case, you know, they don't have that. They've got some older players who, you know, maybe their best years have passed them by, and some younger players who are getting there but aren't there yet. So they're kind of a team in transition, a good team, no question about it, a good team, but certainly with the way the Flames are performing and executing right now, you know, I like their chances in this matchup.
And one of the key figures on that third line really breaks out in game one, with Dylan Dubé scoring a couple goals and coming close to a third in the first period, if the puck would sit down for him for a second there. For a young player to have a playoff like this, we've seen some players have kind of their coming out party in the postseason. How important is it, I guess, for Dylan Dubé long term to have a playoff like this, to know when the lights are on brightest, you can shine? Like that has to be huge for a kid's confidence.
Well, no, there's no question about it, you know, but I mean, you know, maybe I'll play devil's advocate here. And when we first saw Sam Bennett in his very first playoff, that's what it looked like too, because I think he was so effective that year. And you thought, wow, if he could just build on this, you know, what kind of a player is he going to be? I mean, people were comparing him to Doug Gilmour at the time. You know, he played for Gilmour in Kingston. He had obviously, you know, a bit more physical and a bit more size than Doug Gilmour, but, you know, but crafty and skilled, and, you know, was, you know, scored some goals and kind of stalled, right? So I never want to read too much into a very short series, in the same way that, you know, all of the general managers that are doing postmortems right now are being very cautious. Well, they're all, except for Jimmy Rutherford, are being very cautious about, you know, what changes lie ahead, because it is such a short period of time. So, you know, you never want to read too much into, you know, like a couple of weeks. However, to your point, when you see a guy like Dubé, who I think we've been watching him since prior to the Olympics. I know that when Sean Burke was casting about for reinforcements for the Olympic team, one of the people that he was looking at even at that time was Dylan Dubé. So, you know, a lot of people in hockey have had their eyes on him for a long time, and so you don't know when the breakout is going to come. So you're right. If he can, if he can continue this level of play for as long as the Flames go in the playoffs, and then when training camp resumes, you know, come back flushed with the confidence that he can play, you know, at the highest time. I mean, the grind of a regular season is different than the, you know, the sort of energy that you get from playing in the playoffs. But I mean, you know, this playoff aside, or just the sort of natural maturation we've seen of him, you know, I think the Flames saw him as someone that's going to play in the National Hockey League for a long time. And, you know, the fact that he's having this moment right now, that's a great thing, because, you know, who knows how it's going to go in these playoffs. Somebody somewhere is going to sort of navigate this weird path and have an unexpected successful run. And if you can get those kind of contributions, I guess, which is where my point started, from people that are playing in basically in the bottom half of your lineup, that's generally what provides the impetus for those types of unexpected playoff runs.
And you brought up Sam Bennett in there as well. And I have no idea how to evaluate Sam Bennett, the NHL player, because like the regular season, he's borderline scratchable at times. And now in the playoffs, it's Doug Gilmour again. Like you said, I have no idea how you handle that from a Flames perspective as they look at what type of player they have in their highest draft pick in franchise history.
Yeah. And, you know, and I don't know what they're talking of to him about internally, but my guess would be that it would be about focus, because you know, like whenever the season wraps up, and you're in that, you know, you're a fly on the wall in the exit meeting, you know, the message has to be, whether it be from the coaching staff or from management, you know, Sam, you know, you show us these glimpses and we think you can be like a really, really good NHL player. But part of being a really, really good NHL player is consistency. And we haven't seen consistency from you. So, you know, if instead of, you know, going back and working on your shot this summer, or working on your skating this summer, work on your focus. Maybe you've got a coach that works with, you know, the way you prepare for games, you know, like, but figure out a way where you can bring that level of intensity, of nastiness, of, you know, whatever it is that we're seeing right now on a more consistent basis. No one does it for 82 games. No one, not even Connor McDavid can do it for 82 games. No one can do it for 82. But what they really need from him is to have it happen more than 25 times a year, right? If it's 50, mm-hmm. you know, that's a huge difference. It's 25 games where he might make an impact. And if you can get it up to 50, you know, I mean, you know, then his career could really take off. But you're right, he's a guy that's kind of on the cusp, and he teases you because, you know, he was the best player last year in a very disappointing playoff. He's really good again this year. There has to be a way of getting him to focus more on just bringing that every night. And I think that's, you know, that's a, you know, like one of those mental health coaches, you know, like the guys, the psychologists that motivate you, or that give you tactics to, you know, to help prepare better. I mean, tennis players use that all the time, right? I mean, tennis is one of those sports where, because so much of it is individual, so much of it is in the head, you know, the top 200 players in the world all have roughly the same skill set. The Roger Federers and the Rafa Nadals, they're the ones that figure out how to bring it more consistently. And in tennis case, you know, on those points where you have to win, they win them. And so to me, the hockey equivalent of that is you just have to be readier more often than he has been so far in his career.
Last one for you. I do want to touch on the 5 overtime game between the Lightning and Blue Jackets. You've been covering this for a long time. Deadline's a little different now with where you're working compared to the print industry and back in the day in the print industry. But have you ever covered something like that? And how would one even go about doing that in the print industry?
Well, so the year that the Flames were eliminated in Los Angeles, coming off the Stanley Cup final, I think, what was it, double overtime with a Western time zone start. So I think it was the middle of the night in Calgary when the, you know, that puck from Mike Krzyzewski fluttered over Mike Vernon's glove and LA eliminated them. And like, it's one thing if it's, you know, one game out of 82, in which case, you know, they would just let the you know, the press run and that would be that. But because it's an elimination game, the Calgary Heroes, where I was working at the time, held the presses. And basically what you've done at that point is you've written a win scenario and a loss scenario. And the only thing that you have to change is the final score and the name of the final score. So the loss scenario is, oh my goodness, how did they, you know, lose this game after, you know, winning the cup last year? And the win scenario is, whoa, another narrow escape, just like last year in the first round, and maybe the, you know, on to bigger and better things. So, you know, like it was tricky in those days. I mean, it's tricky now, but it was really tricky in those days. But you just imagine, you know, there are only two results: you win or you lose in a playoff overtime game. And so you write it that way, and you just hope that the editor that's handling it types the score in correctly, because they're not going to blame the editor if the score is wrong. They're going to blame the idiot writer who sent in the score at X minus Y. And that has happened, by the way, before, where an editor just, you know, again, they're rushing too, right? They type it in wrong, and you can imagine where the grief comes. It's not the anonymous editor in the office. It's that poor guy who couldn't even get the score right.
Oh, the stories from that fascinate, because I just, growing up as I did, I have absolutely no way to wrap my head around some of the technology and how things were able to come out back then. But even now, as you said, probably a bit stressful for those covering that game the other night, and it caused havoc on the schedule. So fun to be had for all. Eric, always fun catching up, sir. We'll do this again next week.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. That is Eric Dehatchuk, twice weekly here on Hockey Central at noon, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, brought to you by Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, now open for limited dine-in service with all safety precautions in place. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive in the Northeast. A break. When we come back, we'll tee up the rest of the NHL slate for today, and get ready for the Flames tonight, taking on the Dallas Stars before Will joins at 1 and Steinberg at 2 here on Sportsnet 960.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
Just hours away from Game 2 of the Western Conference quarterfinal between the Calgary Flames and the Dallas Stars. That, of course, not the only hockey game on the schedule today. Welcome back to Hockey Central. Noon, everyone. Peter Klein and Logan Gordon, who's been working hard throughout the show back at Sportsnet 960 World Control. Logo, how are you today, sir?
I'm all right, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. And another full slate. People are making jokes. Oh, what if Columbus Tampa Bay goes long again? But anyway, we do have three other games on the schedule, Columbus and Tampa Bay. There is some news from this one. Nathan Gerby is out. We kind of wondered about that. But no Cam Atkinson for the Columbus Blue Jackets today as they go up against Tampa Bay. It's a 1-0 Lightning series there. Vegas with a 1-0 series lead over Chicago. I think we all picked that one to be a sweep or close to it. And Vegas provided no reason for us to doubt them in game one with a pretty convincing win over Chicago there. Carolina and Boston meet again today after a double overtime game yesterday. That is a 6 o'clock start on CBC tonight. And then the late one is the big one out here in Calgary. It's the Flames and the Dallas Stars. 8:30 on Sportsnet 960. The Fan warm up is at 7:30. But again, the big news of the day, Claude Julien admitted to hospital as they have to do some tests. He had some chest pains last night, so he has been sent to the hospital. He will not be back for the rest of the series against the Philadelphia Flyers, at least that's what the reports would lead you to believe. So a scary moment for the Montreal Canadiens and everyone in the hockey world, hoping for the best for Claude Julien. Do want to remind you guys, as part of our extensive pregame coverage today for the Flames and Stars and Sportsnet 960 The Fan, it'll be the Sports Drive at 5, brought to you by Henninger Toyota, where playoff season means red tag savings with payments on a new RAV4 for as little as $12 a day. Check out red tag deals at HenningerToyota.com. That's coming up at 5 o'clock. Coming up in a matter of moments, Will Nault, myself, Logan Gordon, it's the big show. And it's here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.